Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Read Aloud of Wonder. I'm on page 206, if you're following along, at the chapter titled The Bus Stop. Olivia's mom, Augie, Jack, and Daisy come down the stoop just as I'm saying goodbye to Olivia. Slightly awkward since we're in the middle of a kiss. "Hey, guys," says Mom, pretending not to see anything, but the two boys are giggling. "Hi, Mrs. Pullman. Please call me Isabel, Justin," she says again. It's like the third time she's told me this, so I really need to start calling her that. "I'm heading home," I say, as if to explain. "Oh, are you heading to the subway?" she says, following the dog with the newspaper. "Can you walk Jack to the bus stop?" "No problem." "That okay with you, Jack?" the mom asks him, and he shrugs. "Justin, can you stay with him till the bus comes?" "Of course." We all say our goodbyes. Olivia winks at me. "You don't have to stay with me," says Jack as we're walking up the block. "I take the bus by myself all the time." Augie's mom is way too overprotective. He's got a low, gravelly voice, like a tough little guy. He kind of looks like one of those little rascal kids in old black and white movies, like he should be wearing a newsboy cap and knickers. We get to the bus stop, and the schedule says the bus will be there in 8 minutes. "I'll wait with you," I tell him. "Up to you," he shrugs. "Can I borrow a dollar? I want some gum." I fish out a dollar out of my pocket and watch him cross the street to the grocery store on the corner. He seems too small to be walking around by himself somehow. Then I think how I was that young when I was taking the subway by myself, way too young. I'm going to be an overprotective dad someday. I know it. My kids are going to know I care. I'm waiting there a minute or two when I notice three kids walking up the block from the other direction. They walk right past the grocery store, but one of them looks inside and nudges the other two, and they all back up and look inside. I can tell they're up to no good, all elbowing each other, laughing. One of them is Jack's height, but the other two look much bigger, more like teens. They hide behind the fruit stand in front of the store, and when Jack walks out, they trail behind him, making loud throw-up noises. Jack casually turns around at the corner to see who they are, and they run away, high-fiving each other and laughing, little jerks. Jack crosses the street like nothing happens and stands next to me at the bus stop blowing a bubble. "Friends of yours?" I finally say. "Ha," he says. He's trying to smile, but I can see he's upset. "Just some jerks from school," he says. "A kid named Julian and his two gorillas, Henry and Miles." "Do they bother you like that a lot?" "No, they've never done that before. They'd never do that in school or they'd get kicked out. Julian doesn't even live around here, so I guess it was just bad luck running into him." "Oh, okay," I nod. "It's not a big deal," he assures me. We both automatically look down Amesford Avenue to see if the bus is coming. "We're sort of in a war," he says after a minute, as if that explains everything. Then he pulls out this crumpled piece of loose-leaf paper from his jeans pocket and gives it to me. I unfold it, and it's a list of names in three columns. "He's turned the whole grade against me," he says. "Not the whole grade," I point out, looking down the list. He leaves me notes in my locker that says stuff like, "Everybody hates you. You should tell your teacher about that." Jack looks at me like I'm an idiot and shakes his head. "Anyway, you have all these neutrals," I say, pointing to the list. "If you get them on your side, then things will even up a bit." "Yeah, well, that's really going to happen," he says sarcastically. "Why not?" He shoots me another look like I'm absolutely the stupidest guy he's ever talked to in the world. "What?" I say. He snakes his head like I'm hopeless. "Let's just say," he says, "I'm friends with someone who isn't exactly the most popular kid in the school." Then it hits me. What he's not coming out and saying, August. This is all about being friends with August, and he doesn't want to tell me because I'm the sister's boyfriend. Yeah, of course, that makes sense. We see the bus coming down Amesford Avenue. "Well, Justin, hang in there," I tell him, handing back the paper. "Middle school is as bad as it gets, and then it gets better. Everything will work out." He shrugs and shoves the paper and the list back into his pocket. We wave by and then he gets on the bus and I watch it pull away. When I get to the subway station 2 blocks away, I see the same 3 kids out of the front of the bagel place next door. They're still laughing and yuck-yucking at each other like they're some kind of gangbangers, little rich boys in expensive skinny jeans acting tough. Don't know what possesses me, but I take off my glasses, put them in my pocket, and tuck my fiddle case under my arm so the pointy end is facing up. I walk over to them, my face scrunched up, mean looking. They look at me, laughs dying on their lips when they see me, ice cream cones at odd angles. Yo, listen up. Don't mess with Jack, I say really slowly, gritting my teeth, my voice all Clint Eastwood tough guy. Mess with him again and you will be very, very sorry. And then I tap the fiddle case for effect. Got it? They nod in unison, ice cream dripping onto their hands. Good, I nod mysteriously, then sprint down the subway 2 steps at a time. Rehearsal. The play is taking up most of my time as we get closer to opening night. Lots of lines to remember, long monologues where it's just me talking. Olivia had this great idea, though, and it's helping. I have my fiddle with me on stage and I play it a bit while I'm talking. It's not written that way, but Mr. Davenport thinks it adds an extra folksy element to have the stage manager plucking on a fiddle. And for me, it's so great because whenever I need a second to remember my next line, I just start playing a little soldier boy on my fiddle and it buys me some time. I've gotten to know the kid in the show a lot better, especially the pink-haired girl who plays Emily. Turns out she's not nearly as stuck-up as I thought she was, given the crowd she hangs out with. Her boyfriend's this built jock who's a big deal on the varsity sports circuit at school. It's a whole world that I have nothing to do with, so I'm kind of surprised that this Miranda girl turns out to be kind of nice. One day we're sitting on the floor backstage waiting for the tech guys to fix the main spotlight. So how long have you and Olivia been dating? She asks out of the blue. About 4 months now, I say. Have you met her brother? She says casually. It's so unexpected that I can't hide my surprise. You know Olivia's brother? I ask. Via didn't tell you? We used to be good friends. I've known Augie since he was a baby. Oh, yeah, I think I knew that, I answer. I don't want to let on that Olivia had not told me any of this. I don't want to let on how surprised I am that she called her Via. Nobody but Olivia's family calls her Via. And here, this pink-haired girl who I thought was a stranger is calling her Via. Miranda laughs and shakes her head, but she doesn't say anything. There's an awkward silence, and then she starts fishing through her bag and pulls out her wallet. She rifles through a couple of pictures and then hands one to me. It's of a little boy in a park on a sunny day. He's wearing shorts and a t-shirt and an astronaut helmet that covers his entire head. It was like 100 degrees that day, she says, smiling at the picture, but he wouldn't take that helmet off for anything. He wore it for like 2 years straight, in the winter, in the summer, at the beach. It was crazy. Yeah, I've seen pictures in Olivia's house. I'm the one who gave him that helmet, she says. She sounds a little proud of that. She takes the picture and carefully inserts it back into her wallet. Cool, I answer. So you're okay with it? She says, looking at me. I look at her blankly. Okay with what? She raises her eyebrows like she doesn't believe me. You know what I'm talking about, she says, and takes a long drink from her water bottle. Let's face it, she continues. The universe was not kind to Augie Pullman. Bird. Why didn't you tell me you and Miranda Novice used to be friends? I say to Olivia the next day. I'm really annoyed at her for not telling me this. It's not a big deal, she answers defensively, looking at me like I'm weird. It is a big deal, I say. I look like an idiot. How could you not tell me? You've always acted like you don't even know her. I don't know her, she answers quickly. I don't know who that pink-haired cheerleader is. The girl I knew was a total dork who collected American Girl dolls. Oh, come on, Olivia. You come on. You could have mentioned it to me at some point, I say quietly, pretending not to notice the big fat tear that's suddenly rolling down her cheek. She shrugs, fighting back bigger tears. It's okay. I'm not mad, I say, thinking the tears are about me. I honestly don't care if you're mad, she says spitefully. Oh, that's real nice, I fire back. She doesn't say anything. The tears are about to come. Olivia, what's the matter? I say. She doesn't say anything. She shakes her head like she doesn't want to talk about it, but all of a sudden the tears start rolling a mile a minute. I'm sorry, it's not you, Justin. I'm not crying because of you, she finally says through her tears. Then why are you crying? Because I'm an awful person. What are you talking about? She's not looking at me, wiping her tears with the palm of her hand. I haven't told my parents about the show, she says quickly. I shake my head because I don't quite get what she's telling me. That's okay, I say. It's not too late. There are still tickets available. I don't want them to come to the show, Justin, she interrupts impatiently. Don't you see what I'm saying? I don't want them to come. If they come, they'll bring Augie with them. And I just don't feel like... Here she's hit by another round of crying that doesn't let her finish talking. I put my arm around her. I'm an awful person, she says through her tears. You're not an awful person, I say softly. Yes, I am, she sobs. It's just been so nice being at a new school where nobody knows about him, you know? Nobody's whispering about it behind my back. It's just been so nice, Justin. But if he comes to the play, then everyone will talk about it. Everyone will know. I don't know why I'm feeling like this. I swear I've never been embarrassed by him before. I know, I say, soothing her. You're entitled, Olivia. You've dealt with a lot your whole life. Olivia reminds me of a bird sometimes. How her feathers get all ruffled when she's mad. And when she's fragile like this, she's a little lost bird looking for its nest. So I give her my wing to hide under. The universe. I can't sleep tonight. My head is full of thoughts that won't turn off. Lines from my monologues, elements of the periodic table that I'm supposed to be memorizing, theorems I'm supposed to be understanding, Olivia, Augie. Miranda's words keep coming back. The universe was not kind to Augie Pullman. I'm thinking about that a lot and everything it means. She's right about that. The universe was not kind to Augie Pullman. What did that little kid ever do to deserve his sentence? What did the parents do, or Olivia? She once mentioned that some doctor told her parents that the odds of something getting the same combination of syndromes that came together to make Augie's face were like 1 in 4 million. So doesn't that make the universe a giant lottery then? You purchase a ticket when you're born, and it's all just random whether you get a good ticket or a bad ticket. It's all just luck. My head swirls on this, but then softer thoughts soothe like a flattened third on a major chord. No, it's not all random. If it really was all random, the universe would abandon us completely, and the universe doesn't. It takes care of its most fragile creations in ways we can't see, like with parents who adore you blindly and a big sister who feels guilty for being human over you, and a little gravelly voice kid whose friends have left him over you, and even a pink-haired girl who carries your picture in her wallet. Maybe it is a lottery, but the universe makes it all even out in the end. The universe takes care of all its birds. Part 6, August. North Pole. The spud lamp was a big hit at the science fair. Jack and I got an A for it. It was the first A Jack got in any class all year long. He was so psyched. All the science fair projects were set up on tables in the gym. It was the same setup as the Egyptian museums back in December, except this time there were volcanoes and molecule dioramas on the tables instead of pyramids and pharaohs. And instead of the kids taking our parents around to look at everybody's artifact, we had to stand by our tables while all the parents wandered around the room and came over to us one by one. Here's the math on that one. 60 kids in the grade equals 60 sets of parents, and doesn't even include grandparents. So that's minimum of 120 pairs of eyes that find their way over to me. Eyes that aren't used to me as their kids' eyes are by now. It's like how compass needles always point north, no matter which way you're facing. All those eyes are compasses, and I'm like the North Pole to them. That's why I still don't like school events that include parents. I don't hate them as much as I did at the beginning of the school year. Like the Thanksgiving Sharing Festival, that was the worst one, I think. That was the first time I had to face the parents all at once. The Egyptian Museum came after that, but that one was okay because I got to dress up as a mummy and nobody noticed me. Then came the winter concert, which I totally hated because I had to sing in the chorus. Not only can I not sing at all, but I felt like I was on display. The New Year art show wasn't quite so bad, but it was still annoying. They put up our artwork in the hallways all over the school and had the parents come and check it out. It was like starting school all over again, having unsuspecting adults pass me on the stairway. Anyway, it's not that I care that people react to me. Like I've said a gazillion times, I'm used to it by now. I don't let it bother me. It's like when you go outside and it's drizzling a little. You don't put on boots for a drizzle. You don't even open your umbrella. You walk through it and barely notice your hair getting wet. But when it's a huge gym full of parents, the drizzle becomes like this total hurricane. Everybody's eyes hit you like a wall of water. Mom and Dad hang around my table a lot, along with Jack's parents. It's kind of funny how parents actually end up forming the same little groups their kids form. Like my parents and Jack's and Summer's mom all like and get along with each other. And I see Julian's parents hang out with Henry's parents and Miles' parents. And even the two Max's parents hang out together. It's so funny. I told Mom and Dad about it later when we were walking home, and they thought it was a funny observation. I guess it's true. Like seeks like, said Mom. The Augie doll. For a while, the war was all we talked about. February was when it was really at its worst. That's when practically nobody was talking to us, and Julia had started leaving notes in our lockers. The notes to Jack were stupid, like, you stink, big cheese, and nobody likes you anymore. I got notes like freak, and another one that said, get out of our school, or Summer thought we should report the notes to Miss Rubin, who was the middle school dean, or even Mr. Tushman, but we thought that it would be like snitching. Anyway, it's not like we didn't leave notes, too. Though ours weren't really mean. They were kind of funny and sarcastic. One was, you're so pretty, Julian. I love you. Will you marry me? Love, Belula. Another was, love your hair. XOX, Belua. Another was, you're a babe. Tickle my feet. XO, Belua. Belua was a made-up person that me and Jack came up with. She had really gross habits, like eating the green stuff in between her toes and sucking on her knuckles, and we figured someone like that would have a real crush on Julian, who looked and acted like someone in the Kids Bop commercial. There were also a couple of times in February when Julian, Miles, and Henry played tricks on Jack. They didn't play tricks on me, I think, because they knew that if they got caught bullying me, it would be a big-time trouble for them. Jack, they figured, was an easier target. So one time they stole his gym shorts and played monkey in the middle with them in the locker room. Another time, Miles, who sat next to Jack in homeroom, swiped Jack's worksheet off his desk, crumbled it into a ball, and tossed it to Julian across the room. This wouldn't have happened if Miss Petosa had been there, of course, but there was a substitute teacher that day, and subs never really know what's going on. Jack was good about this stuff. He never let them see he was upset, though I think sometimes he was. The other kids in the grade knew about the war, except for Savannah's group. The girls were neutral at first, but by March they were getting sick of it, and so were some of the boys. Like another time when Julian was dumping some pencil sharpener shavings into Jack's backpack, Amos, who was usually tight with them, grabbed the backpack out of Julian's hand and returned it to Jack. It was starting to feel like the majority of boys weren't buying into Julian anymore. Then a few weeks ago, Julian started spreading this ridiculous rumor that Jack hired some hitman to get him and Miles and Henry. This lie was so pathetic that people were actually laughing about him behind his back. At that point, any boys who still had been on his side now jumped ship and were clearly neutral. So by the end of March, only Miles and Henry were on Julian's side, and I think even they were getting tired of the war by then. I'm pretty sure everyone stopped playing the plague game behind my back, too. No one really cringes when I bump into them anymore. And people borrow my pencils without acting like the pencil has cooties. People even joke around with me now sometimes. Like the other day, I saw Maya writing a note to Ellie on a piece of ugly doll stationery. And I don't know why, but I just kind of randomly said, "Did you know that the guy who created the ugly dolls based them on me?" Maya looked at me with her eyes wide open, like she totally believed me. Then when she realized I was only kidding, she thought it was the funniest thing in the world. "You're so funny, August," she said, and then she told Ellie and some of the other girls what I had said, and they all thought it was funny too. Like, at first they were shocked, but then, when they saw I was laughing about it, they knew it was okay to laugh about it too. The next day I found a little ugly doll keychain sitting on my chair with a nice little note from Maya that said, "For the nicest guy, Augie doll in the world, XO Maya." 6 months ago, stuff like that would never have happened, but now it happens more and more. Also, people have been really nice about the hearing aids I started wearing. Lobot. Ever since I was little, the doctors told my parents someday I'd need hearing aids. I don't know why this always freaked me out a bit. Maybe because anything to do with my ears bothers me a lot. My hearing was getting worse, but I hadn't told anyone about it. The ocean sound that was always in my head had been getting louder. It was drowning out people's voices like I was underwater. I couldn't hear teachers if I sat in the back of the class, but I knew if I told Mom and Dad about it, I'd end up with hearing aids, and I was hoping I could make it through fifth grade without having that happen. But then, in my annual checkup in October, I flunked the audiology test, and the doctor was like, "Dude, it's time," and he sent me to a special ear doctor who took impressions of my ear. Out of all my features, my ears are the ones I hate the most. They're like tiny closed fists on the side of my face. They're too low on my head. They look like squashed pieces of pizza dough sticking out of the top of my neck or something. Okay, maybe I'm exaggerating a little, but I really hate them. When the ear doctor first pulled the hearing aids out for me, I looked at Mom and I groaned. "I'm not wearing that thing," I announced, folding my arms out in front of me. "I know they probably look kind of big," said the ear doctor, "but we had to attach them to a headband because we had no other way of making them so they stay in your ears. See, normal hearing aids usually have a part that wraps around the outer ear to hold the inner bud in place. But in my case, since I don't have outer ears, they had to put the earbuds on this heavy-duty headband that was supposed to wrap around the back of my head." "I can't wear that, Mom," I whined. "You'll hardly notice them," said Mom, trying to be cheerful. "They look like headphones." "Headphones? Look at them, Mom," I said angrily. "I'll look like Lobot." "Which one is Lobot?" said Mom calmly. "Lobot?" The ear doctor smiled as he looked at the headphones and made some adjustment. "The Empire Strikes Back? The bald guy with the cool bionic radio transmitter thing that wraps around the back of his skull?" "I'm drawing a blank," said Mom. "You know Star Wars stuff?" I asked the ear doctor. "No Star Wars stuff," he answered, slipping the thing over my head. "I practically invented Star Wars stuff." He leaned back in his chair to see how the headband fit and then took it off again. "Now, Augie, I want to explain what all this is," he said, pointing to the different parts of one of the hearing aids. "This curved piece of plastic over here connects to the tubing on the ear mold. That's why we took those impressions back in December, so that this part that goes inside your ear fits nice and snug. This part here is called the tone hook, okay? And this thing in the special part we've attached to the cradle here. The Lobot part, I said miserably. Hey, Lobot is cool, said the ear doctor. It's not like we're saying you're going to look like Jar Jar, you know. That would be bad. He slid the earphones on my head again carefully. There you go, August. How's that? Totally uncomfortable, I said. You'll get used to them very quickly, he said. I looked in the mirror. My eyes started tearing up. All I saw were these tubes jutting out of my ears on either side of my head like antennas. Do I really have to wear this, Mom? I said, trying not to cry. I hate them. They don't make any difference. Give it a second, buddy, said the doctor. I haven't even turned them on yet. Wait until you hear the difference. You'll want to wear them. No, I won't. And then he turned them on. Hearing brightly. And that's where I need to stop for today. I'm on page 224 at the chapter Hearing Brightly. And that's where I'll pick it up next time. Have a great day, everyone.